I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for another episode of It's All About Food. And boy, when we get through this hour, you are really going to believe me, if you never did before, that it truly is all about food. We are going to be connecting more dots than I ever imagined connecting. And you know I love connecting dots, right? Okay, I am here in the Progressive Radio Network studio, live with David Young, who is here from Hong Kong. He is the co-founder and CEO of Green Monday, a social venture founded in Hong Kong that takes on climate change and global food insecurity through public advocacy, impact investing, corporate consulting, and specialized retail. Under Green Monday, David launched Green Common, the world's first plant-based green living emporium. Green Monday is named by Fast Company as top 50 most innovative companies in China, while David is named by Fast Company as 100 most creative people in China, PE 100 Asia by Purpose Economy, 17 rising social entrepreneurs by Conscious Company Magazine, and receive Hong Kong's 10 Outstanding Young Persons 2015 Award. David is the director of Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute, Hong Kong AIDS Foundation, and Hong Kong Buddhist Association. He also authored a number of bestsellers on applied Buddhism and Zen philosophy. I have to take a big breath here because this is just one fully loaded resume. I can't believe I'm sitting in front of this guy. David, thank you for joining me today.
Well, I should have given a shortened version of that.
No. This is amazing. I want everyone, if they don't know about you already, to know about what you are doing and what is possible.
Well, pleasure to be here and great to be sharing the story of Green Monday with everyone.
Okay, so let's get started. I'm sure you have your elevator speech or whatever. Let's just get the brief condensed mission and description and we'll go from there.
Well, I started my days as vegetarian 16 years ago, actually in New York. I live over 11 years in the city. And I moved back to Asia in 2003, 2004. And that was when I, on one hand, realized that the concept and the awareness about plant-based eating is just completely missing and choices are very limited. So fast forward to 5 years ago, I've been in business for a long time and also very involved with charity, as you mentioned, some of the foundations and charities that I sit on the board or actively participate. But I just say, hey, you know, can there be a combination of doing good and doing well at the same time? Build a venture, but it's a social-driven venture that can take on many of these global issues, which, amazingly, there's one common intersection point, and that is food. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do not realize that their choice of diet on every single day, every single meal, has huge consequence on the environment around us and also the future of humanity. So that's how I came up with the idea of Green Monday, with multiple arms. And the idea is not to convert people to become vegan necessarily, but to shift them to a more plant-centric diet.
Okay, well, I love that. Okay, good. So what is Green Monday? Because I'm reading about it and, you know, my head's kind of exploding because Green Monday is so many different things all at
yes.
once.
Well, there's one report or one coverage of us say that Green Monday is many ventures but one mission. When we started Green Monday, we said we need to tackle – this is such a gigantic problem, right? You know, we're talking about climate change. We're talking about animal issues. We're talking about health of many people. And just education alone cannot get the job done. If we create the most amazing campaign that everyone knows about and advocates plant-based eating, that's great. But the next thing is, after people know why they need to change, then they need to know how and with what. So the reason why we create such a holistic and comprehensive social venture model, which eventually Fast Company called us one of the 50 innovative companies, is because we just say, in order to get the job done, we need to do all of those combined. Just having one side of the coin or one element is not enough. So that's why, you know, we came up with this really aggressive plan or blueprints at the beginning, which many people thought we were crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But 5 years later, now in 2017, we are very fortunate and very happy to say that this holistic model is coming into fruition.
I've been raging quite a bit about capitalism because the mission behind capitalism is to profit at any cost. And there really is no social component to capitalism. Mm. And so what happens is we have exploitation on every level. We have exploitation of people, exploitation of non-human animals, exploitation of the environment. What else is there?
Well, many more.
Exploitation. And we need this social component. So when you talk about your business model, doing good and doing well at the same time, somehow I would love to see this just folded into all of capitalism. Maybe there's another name for it ultimately. Maybe it's Green Mondayism.
Well, you know, I'm glad you bring that up because what my ultimate dream of Green Monday, the group, is more than just kind of disrupting the way people think about food or think about sustainability. It really is about disrupting people's way of thinking about capitalism. Because at the end, there's one major driving force of the world, and it's not just, you know, from government, it's not just from people, but actually it's simply supply and demand, which is what the economy is about. And a lot of the things that we are doing, that we are eating, that we are purchasing, is just, you know, if you look back 10 years ago or 20, 30 years ago, those so-called habits were not there. And they were all created by this capitalistic world. So can we strike a balance of, you know, on one hand, you know, people say, oh, we got to maximize revenue, maximize profit, but at the expense of many things that you mentioned that we exploit, or striking a balance which, from a consumer standpoint, these type of new companies, these type of new products are what we go for, and we are talking about a much more long-term, holistic return, both for the consumers and for these companies. So in one way, you know, Green Monday, other than creating a new paradigm of food and green, is really about rethinking business.
Absolutely, rethinking business. I remember when I was in college, a long time ago, I studied chemical engineering, and we always had to do return on investments for whatever program we were designing on paper. It wasn't realistic, but we had to include the whole economic balance. But it wasn't a real economic balance. And the return on investment for any project, I think, is fantasy in a lot of places because they don't consider so many pieces that need to be rethought. So things that appear to be profitable are profitable for a few in the short term, but not for overall society in the long term.
Well, I mean, with food is one very good example, right? Many of these companies that have dominated the food market, not just in the U.S., but globally, these are gigantic companies and hugely profitable. But they have probably been making a lot of profit at the expense of a lot of other things. Now, meat just happens to be a subject that a lot of people have overlooked. We kind of take it for granted that, oh, you know, just as people get more affluent, they say, oh, I can afford it, I'll buy it, I'll eat it. But what they don't realize is all the social costs that come along. And sometimes we call it like the external costs that, you know, you don't put in the balance sheet or the income statement of that particular company, but it's just borne by the whole world and also future generations. So the reason why we say, hey, you know, we have the advocacy arm of Green Monday, which is to suggest everyone to at least go plant-based one day a week, similar to Meatless Mondays.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Green Common, and then we have Green Monday Ventures. Green Common is the destination. Really want to give people the idea of what the future of food can be like, should experience. We know, and I'm sure many of these people have been guests at the show, is there are a lot of extremely creative, innovative food entrepreneurs that are coming up with great new products that are plant-based and obviously no harm to animals and less footprints on, and also less burdensome to the world in terms of resource consuming. And we want to give them this new platform or new stage for these great food products to showcase them and for people to try all these new ingredients. So Green Common become that solution, which is a combination of dining and shopping and learning too. We have classes at Green Common all the time. And then finally, the venture side is we want to work with many of these entrepreneurs together to come up with solutions. Now, the last piece of that is, although I travel and my team travel very frequently to the US all the time, but we are based in Asia. Now, when it comes to feeding people, almost 2/3 of the world's population live in Asia. Mm-hmm. China alone is 18-19% of global population. So if we are serious about shifting the world's diet and caring for the planet and humanity's common future, then I just thought, well, someone and some people or some organizations need to do work in Asia. And now it turns out we are one of the key pieces of that.
Yes, well, Asia is the big player. And unfortunately, what we are seeing, and it needs to be thwarted, is, as you mentioned earlier, as people's income increases, they feel they can afford meat. Why not? Yep. Let's eat it. And diabetes is going up. Heart disease is going up in China and India.
Obesity.
And that we are sending the wrong information. We are educating them with the wrong information, and we know it all. And this your first piece, the why, educating, having people learn about it, it's really hard.
Yes,
to get that information out.
Well, now, people have been programmed, the last, 20, 30 years. A lot of it is, again, going back to capitalism or even simply advertising and thinking, oh, these type of fast food or this type of, soda, this is the way people should eat. So China, and along with many other Asian countries, have very much adopted that. Now, unfortunately, we know that is not the most wholesome diets that people can consume. So, all the issues that we see, for example, in the U.S., China is catching up, except they just happen to have four times or more than four times the population of the states. So now the why, how we go in and bring up this issue. Now, with each country or even within each country, each demographic group, different people have concern about different topics. Some are more environment driven, some are more animal driven. Some are, of course, more health-driven. Now, in the case of China, if you're going to come in with an animal welfare issue, I'll have to say, unfortunately, that's not going to be the key driver. You will have a very, very remote chance of convincing people to change. However, and this is ironic, but the one thing that really catch people's attention now in China and many parts of Asia is food safety. Mm. People really know about some of the horrendous things that they do in, let's say, factory farming, not necessarily from a humane standpoint, but in terms of all the unnatural or really bad things that are put in the whole food value chain that ultimately are put on our plate and fed to people. So obviously, antibiotics, pesticides, hormones.
And filth.
Yes.
Now, excrement. How much do you want in your food?
Those type of scandals are happening every day, every week, and they're on the front page of newspapers. They are being talked about at talk shows, on radios. So, from 3-year-old to 85-year-old, everyone knows food safety is an issue. And the reality is, the way we are eating right now, we simply cannot feed 7 billion people, which is the reason why so many of these companies have been using many practices that really are not right. So those are getting exposed now. So in China, when it comes to why, food safety is one of the key subjects or entry points that we use to talk about why reducing meat consumption and eating green is such a necessity of paramount importance right now.
There's some new science that came out that I keep talking about because it explains a lot to me. I can't say I'm excited about it, but it explains the human mind. And it explains that when we're raised with a certain foundation, a certain belief, in many cases, it's really impossible to shake that belief over time. No matter what you put in front of the individual, mm-hmm. they just make up reasons to believe what they were taught originally. That's pretty scary.
Well, that's kind of a bias towards the status quo, right? You know, you have people have been doing it, and you know, you kind of feel that peer pressure that if everyone is doing it, then even you know that may not be the best thing to do, you just kind of say, all right, you know, I'll just follow what everyone does. Like one thing that in Asian culture that people eat a lot, for example, is shark fin. Shark fin soup is a considered kind of like a really luxurious dish at banquet. Now, for a long time, this is at least a decade, if not two decades, people, first of all, know that we are killing about 90-something percent of sharks, which is completely disrupting or destroying the whole ecosystem in the ocean. That's one. And two, the way we catch these sharks are just absurdly inhumane. So, but despite that, to your point, now a lot of the younger generation people already refuse to eat shark fin soup. But let's say the older generation, they still think that when you're doing a banquet, if you don't have that dish in the middle, then you are not treating your guests right. You know, you're kind of like being so, you know, it's too humble not to have that. So culture change really takes time. Mm-hmm. So part of what we do with Green Monday, and of course, still a long way to go, but we don't try to go in to bash or blame or shame people because that is not really the best way to change people's behavior. The way we think about branding Green Monday is we have to out-brand, out-market, out-cool the existing trend out there, or out-trend them, basically. So we're very lucky and fortunate that, you know, we have some of the most famous, most influential celebrities and influencers. You know, they are the equivalent of, you know, the Natalie Portmans, the Taylor Swifts of Asia, to speak on behalf of Green Monday. So on one hand, obviously, their reach is awesome. But the other side is we are also using their kind of the cool factor. And that is not just on pure celebrities, but also we work with a lot of companies, you know, the Googles, or many of the cool, innovative companies that they are willing to step up and set the trend. So altogether, you know, by working with so many different entities that are more considered innovative and forward-thinking, it lends the coolness factor to Green Monday that people aspire to join this movement. And then, now, you're at the table, and now instead of being the one that is left out, the person who is not doing Green Monday is actually the one who is being left out. So it took a while, but once we hit that tipping point, particularly with the younger generation, they are the ones then to, now of course nowadays with social media, to really get it viral. And it hits a point when all of a sudden, everyone is talking about it, and you know, hotels, restaurants, schools, companies start calling us and say they want to be a partner and join the movement.
Fantastic.
And we say, well, the way to do it, very simple. We don't even ask them to eliminate meat on Monday. We say, you know, in what you serve to your employees, to your students, or even to your customers, on that particular day, make sure over half of what you serve are plant-based. And then the next step is to go from one day to 5 or 7 days. No one needs to become a vegan, but everyone can shift to more plant-centric.
Okay, let's talk about Hong Kong.
Sure.
So my understanding is Hong Kong has the highest meat consumption per capita in the world. I mean, I thought, you know, the United States was the top dog there, but no, it's Hong Kong.
I know,
that's amazing.
That's an infamous number one. That's not a number one that I or we are proud of. Now, yes, you're right. For the longest time, the U.S. Has been number one in that category. But since I think it was 2008, I don't know how that happened, but Hong Kong leapfrogged the U.S. on a per capita basis, of course, as the number one meat consumption region. Now, there are many things. If you look at, you know, people on the street, you don't notice, you don't necessarily notice a lot of, let's say, people who are too heavy, or, you know, people in general seem to look healthy. But the problem with our diet is we people go to banquets, hot pot restaurants, and buffets a lot. So in a buffet or in a hot pot dinner, you just unconsciously keep eating and eating and eating, almost like for three straight hours. Now, compare one or two slices of beef versus a steak that people have in the U.S. Now, of course, that steak looks much chunkier and much more substantial. But what we do is we just keep adding that, eating that endlessly for a few hours. So, and also Hong Kong, this is part of the problem of being a relatively affluent city, is people also tend to waste a lot of food.
Mm-hmm.
Food waste is also a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you want a lot of choices, then you end up not being able to consume all of them. So they go to landfill. But that counts towards consumption. So, yes, I mean, since 2008, I believe, Hong Kong has become number one. And we are really taking a major step. So I guess one, this is kind of more of a background, is, you know, when we started Green Monday 5 years ago, at that point, only less than 5% of the city had any sort of vegetarian diet habits. So whether that is 1 day, 2 days, or 7 days, less than 5% of people in Hong Kong had any sort of that plant-based diet habits. Now, we are at 22% of the whole city. So that's about 1.7 million people. So I would say that, you know, at the most meat-centric, the most meat-heavy city or region in the world, it seems like it is mission impossible. But, you know, in not a very long period of time, you know, we have created quite an impact in shifting the way people think about food.
I was in Hong Kong in 1995. I haven't been back since. And then it was an interesting time because it was just before the transition of governments between Great Britain to China.
Yep.
And I was a vegan then. And I don't have any really good, memorable food experiences. I was on a business trip, so I was with a lot of colleagues. And although I've always been very loud and outspoken about what I eat, we went to where they wanted to go. And I just remember a lot of oily vegetables and wondering if that oil was vegetable oil or something else.
Now, oily, that's a key word. When I moved back to Hong Kong in 2003, 2004, well, first of all, the choices, of course, was lacking. So that's number one. And two, the options that were available within that limited choice, particularly in many of the traditional Chinese vegan or vegetarian restaurants. Now, the chefs kind of think that because the meats were not there, so they need to find a way to overcompensate for the lack of flavor or for the lack of fulfillment.
The seemingly lack of flavor.
Seemingly, yes. So what they end up doing is they add a lot of MSG to it. Mm. And with oil, they just go excessive. So I was looking at many of these dishes and I said to myself, wait a minute, even though the meat is not on the plates, but this is not the wholesome. This is not the right way to eat plant-based. And actually, many of the food is also highly processed. So that has been sitting in the back of my mind for a long time. Now, of course, gradually, you know, there may be a good vegetarian, vegan restaurant open, you know, every couple of years. But to me, the pace of that was just too slow. Now, fast forward again to, you know, 5-7 years ago in the U.S., this transition or this movement start to really take hold.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to see, you know, particularly in cities like New York and Los Angeles and the Bay Area, there are a lot of very nice cuisines and great vegan chefs. Now, and the food, of course, you know, focus a lot on whole foods, a full range of colors, and, you know, just very original nutrition from food, which is actually a much better way to eat for everyone, not just for vegan. So I think now, you know, it's not just a food revolution that we are creating, but we are also basically starting a culinary revolution, which is really creating the atmosphere so that the chefs rethink the way they cook food as well, not just purely plant-based, but food in general. And I would say if you come to Hong Kong right now, the quality has dramatically increased, not just over the last two decades, but even over the last 2 years, the options have become significantly better.
Yes, I've seen a lot of photographs. I'm sure it's changed. And I know that even 10 years ago, I don't know that Green Monday could have had as much impact 10, 15 years ago, because there's this momentum and it's happening faster in a shorter amount of time than was possible before. I remember I was involved with a nonprofit called Earth Save International back in the 80s and 90s. It was founded by John Robbins, who wrote Diet for New America. I'm not sure if you know his story. He was, for those of you who don't know, I've probably said it like a gazillion times. but he's the son of Baskin and Robbins, and he gave up the ice cream empire to pursue a better path. And he gave up dairy and was encouraging everyone to eat a plant-based diet. And he wrote a groundbreaking bestseller in 1987 called Diet for New America. And there's been many other books that have continued on the theme of connecting health, environment, and the treatment of animals. And I worked, I was the executive director and on the board of his organization for a number of years. And at one point, we were talking with people in Hong Kong about a Hong Kong affiliate.
Really?
And this was probably around 2000, 1999, 2000. And we talked about it, and ultimately it didn't go anywhere. but because the time wasn't right.
You're right. I mean, definitely, had we started Green Monday, you know, 10 years ago or even 15, we probably would not be speaking about it right now. Timing definitely is important for multiple reasons. First of all, I think people won't listen until things get really bad. I mean, this is a very sad part about human nature. Is, you know, until it is, you are so close to bottom, you don't reflect and rethink about things in general. Now, but here with climate change, for example, it's so noticeable, right? I mean, in Hong Kong this past Christmas, it was 26 degrees Celsius, which is 80 degrees, I think, something like that, on Christmas. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, we need to wear, you know, big jacket to go out on Christmas. So you don't need to you don't need to educate people about
that. It's 90 degrees in New York today. It's May.
You're right, exactly. So walking here was only like a 15-minute walk, but I'm completely, you know, I was sweating, and, you know, it's only mid-May. So it doesn't take a genius to know that climate change is here. You don't need to think about polar bear in North Pole. You know, it is happening around us. So I guess on one hand is because things have gotten so bad and so blatantly obvious. And the other part is simply the global synchronization of this movement has happened. You know, the wheels start to turn, and, you know, we ride off the momentum from each other. So when something happens in New York, when something happened in Scandinavia, something happened in Europe, or, you know, anywhere, then we can start saying, hey, look, they are doing this already. Maybe we should start to pay attention and maybe think about what we do here in Asia. And once the momentum starts shifting, that is when it kind of starts to snowball. And we can then say, look, you know, it's not just an advocacy movement, but also, for example, in Silicon Valley, there are a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of scientists that are coming up with innovations. And there is actually even business opportunity here. Now, that also opened up the whole interest from a lot of people, because, yes, I mean, as much as we should care about the environment, but Again, it's capitalism. It's unfortunate, but people may care more. The cha-ching maybe is the one thing that catch people's attention immediately. So I think, you know, those are all kind of the things that are happening with, you know, within the last 5, 7 or maximum 10 years that you start to say, hey, you know, we are a little bit behind the curve, so let's catch up. And of course, you know, because the reasoning behind all this is already so solid. So by the time people do their own research, you know, they hear about Green Monday and then they do their own research and read more about it, it becomes kind of so obvious. And so you're absolutely right that, you know, the timing, you know, in the case of me and my co-founder starting it, you know, we have brainstormed a lot of different ideas of social venture. And it just finally, you know, 5.5 years ago, the topic came to food over lunch, not surprisingly. And, you know, so I guess some part of it is also serendipity.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Green Common. Can you give us a virtual tour?
Well, Green Common is basically a paradise for, paradise for vegans. And second is actually a paradise for anyone who just aspire to eat cleaner, healthier, and, you know, just a more refreshing lifestyle. To us, for the longest time, as you mentioned, on one hand, finding vegetarian food or vegan food is not easy. That's one. And then the second part is shopping for ingredients to cook at home is even more difficult. Many of the mainstream supermarkets do not have any selection of vegan, whether they are condiments, whether they are cooking sauce, or whatever that is, you know, it's just missing. And my family used to have to go to this one shop. If I put it in the context of New York City, for example, then I have to go to Queens to that particular shop just to buy that. And then I need to go to Brooklyn to that particular shop to buy that. And then go to Manhattan, Chinatown, to buy just that particular ingredient. And I mean, I was just thinking for a long time, can someone just group these things together? I'm sure I'm not the only one who want it. So Green Common is to become that one-stop destination. Now, we don't put the word vegan at the sign or at the, you know, at the frontage of the shop as the name Green suggests. It's just a very refreshing experience. Now, for most of our stores, they are a combination of dining and shopping. The dining part is really important. Now, we use some of these new ingredients, for example, such as Beyond Meat. We bring Beyond Meat, the Beyond Burger, to Hong Kong. Hong Kong is the first city to launch these products outside of the US. Now, if you just put them on shelf or in the freezer, people don't know what they taste like. Mm-hmm. They have no idea what is so special about this future of protein brand. Now, that's why the restaurant is so important, is we start to use these ingredients and create Asian versions or Asian adaptations of dishes that people are familiar with. So, for example, there's a dish in all Asia that people know is Hainan chicken. It's kind of like a Southeast Asia style of chicken, of preparing chicken. And so we use the Beyond Meat chicken and hand shred it. And create the Hainan vegan version of Hainan chicken. And then there's another dish called the Taiwanese braised pork rice, which is a household dish. And we use the vegan crumble to make that. And people eat that and say, oh, you know, this is so tasty. The sauce is the type of sauce that they're familiar with. And after they try it, they say, okay, I want to maybe bring this home and cook at home too. So Green Common create that one stop, not just shopping and dining, but also experience. I always like to compare it to kind of like an Apple store. we like to call it like the Apple store with real apples. So the look and feel is actually quite like an Apple store. Now, of course, you don't just buy products of Apple from the store, but it's a holistic full experience. We bring these products in, not just to sell at Green Common, but then we also distribute them to existing food channels and also to food service providers and restaurants. So having Green Common as the showcase and then penetrate to the whole city through distribution. So that is the business of Green Common, and it's just growing rapidly right now because especially with the most recent launch of the burger, people just have a whole different idea about how far plant-based food has come.
I want to bring something up, how far plant-based foods have come, because I'm sure you've had some of these Buddhist-based meat analogs that have been made for hundreds, thousands,
a long time.
Fantastic.
Some of them are quite good. Some of them are also quite oily. So
yeah, some of them are oily.
Depending on brand.
And it depends on, the chef and how they're prepared. But some of them are amazing.
Yes.
And they've been around for so long.
Yes.
And yet we've kind of had to, go around a long way to have the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs come up with their own version.
Yes. So, some people, when we bring up these new brands and this new inventions, people is like, wait a minute, meat analog has been around forever, and they exist in many of the vegetarian cuisines right now. So what's so special about it? I think there are multiple elements. First of all, branding is important. Storytelling is important. Highlighting the scientific facts. For example, let's say how much protein is in the product per serving basis. No hormones, non-GMO. Labeling, basically. These brands may exist in Asia, but in terms of the storytelling and the narrative, it's still kind of a little bit outdated. So, yes, if you taste the product, they are not bad. Some of them are not bad. But in terms of the holistic packaging and storytelling, it's just not as up to date. And also,
so they're not good marketers.
Well, part of Silicon Valley, on one hand, of course, it's very amazing innovation. But the other hand, it's just great storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, you really highlight, what are the problems that you're solving and why the products or the inventions are the solutions to that. And sometimes with people that have a manufacturing background or more of a humble, just food processing, company background, they look at it more from a kind of nuts and bolts standpoint. They don't tell the story as appealing or as captivating as, many of these newer age entrepreneurs. So now, of course, I should not discount the fact that these new companies do have innovations as well, particularly, how to use many of the technology of food tech to come up with new ways to present this meat analog. So yes, of course, there are inventions there as well. We should not discount that.
Mm-hmm.
But part of the story of why, many of these Asian, meat analog companies that simply were more perceived as old-fashioned or purely, for example, for the Buddhist community, was because their marketing and the storytelling were kind of missing. So very much just cater to a niche group of consumers.
Now let's talk about the investment side. So are you investing, or people are investing in you, or a bit of everything?
A bit of everything, actually. our day is kind of interesting. We can, in one meeting, we can be talking to entrepreneurs and we are funding their companies and investing in them. But on the other hand, we are talking to investors to invest in our fund or invest in Green Common. Now, why we have the venture fund, the Impact Venture Fund, is because ultimately, we alone cannot, no one alone can create all the solutions of this whole ecosystem. So by investing in these companies, we obviously create a stronger tie to them and let them know that, there is also a huge market called Asia that they should not overlook or forget. And we very much want to accelerate their growth into that part of the world, which for many American companies, particularly startups, is almost like outer space to them. It really is a foreign space. And also within Asia, different countries, of course, all the rules and regulations and consumer habits are different. So having Green Ventures to work with these companies from an earlier stage we can kind of, on one hand, influence their mindset of growing into that region, and also give them some input on what Asian consumers may expect. So all of that, you know, kind of contribute to them saying, okay, we start to build that into their pipeline of their R&D or their production. And then one day when they're ready, then we can expedite to bring these products, the whole process to bring these products or these inventions to that part of the world. So now on, in terms of the fund, of course, we do bring in investors into the fund. Now, I do believe that is also a great way to engage many of the, you know, wealthy families or corporations, for them to use this as a way to think about the future of food. Because if they just read it on newspaper, if they just see an article, they may say, okay, you know, I will participate on a personal basis. But after all, they also have a lot of resources, you know, clearly the, you know, financial resources, and also many, many other ones. If they're a real estate developer, maybe they can consider bringing a green common into their shopping mall. Mm. If they are a, you know, food or supply chain company, they can think about doing that as well. So if they're a hotel, of course, they can incorporate more green dining with their food service. So the idea is, if we can use this investment vehicle as a way to engage these families, corporations, individuals, that is also a way to spread the movement. We should not look at spreading the movement purely as, you know, the three meals a day, but also what these people can contribute to make this movement grow faster.
To make it grow faster, everything has to happen at the same time.
Exactly. And yeah, we need to get, you know, just, it's kind of like, for example, making a movie. You need not just the best actor or the best actress, you need many, many talents. And actually, most of them are behind the scene.
The government. Mm. Okay. I think the government tends to be the slowest moving piece of the equation, if it's even in the equation anymore. you know, they make policy and they decide, you know, what's the most nutritious foods and what we should be eating. And they also make rules for, at least in the United States, what the schools should have. But they are so slow in getting up to speed with the science, even when it's right in front of them, you know, the mm-hmm. lobbyists come along and vote it down. Is the government playing a piece in your projects?
Well, we have multiple government officials, very senior ones, who definitely support Green Monday, both individually and also to lead efforts and initiatives within the government, both within the realm of the government, or potentially to do some kind of, not policy, but more like guidelines to the public. So one of the guidelines that has helped us a lot is actually the school dietary guideline to introduce more plant-based food and reduce meat, and suggesting that Green Monday is a good platform to join. So yes, we do leverage some of government resources, but in the grand scheme of things, that is still very small. You're right. In general, governments tend to be much slower in... And if you wait for them, then, you know, I think there's always this misperception that, you know, oh, if this is something about, you know, climate and the world and sustainability, you know, we should wait for government to set policy. Now, if we have that kind of mindset, then we're doomed. Then we're really doomed, because at the end, then no one is taking action. I really do believe that... I'm a deep believer that, you know, grassroots movements and capitalism actually are the biggest force of change. And we just cannot discount the force of supply and demand of the economy. So that's why, you know, when we looked at, you know, the kind of the evolution of Green Monday, yes, we do engage the government, but that has never been a big part of our puzzle.
I just had this random thought mm-hmm. about the Hong Kong people, and maybe this plays in their favor or not. I'm curious. But the fact that they had this huge transitional government from Great Britain to China, I wonder, you know, what the identity of the Hong Kong individual is and how maybe changing their food choices might work in this metamorphosis of their identity.
Ooh, wow, that's a loaded subject. Now, Hong Kong, I mean, this transition is not easy. In fact, in a few weeks, we will be celebrating the 20th.
Celebrating is an interesting word,
actually,
right?
Yes. I mean, I think most people may even question the choice of that word. But 20 years since the handover. There is certainly some identity crisis to many Hong Kong people, and it is taking a lot of adjustment, or some adjustment that simply for some people may never be able to make. It is difficult. I mean, the regime is so different. The way of, you know, the two different types of governments and parties are just so significantly different that, you know, that's why with us, you know, not just young people, but just with the society in general, but particularly with young people, the social unrest, the stress among different types of, you know, stakeholders are just happening everywhere. Mm. And the city is, in many ways, actually is quite torn apart. So even a few years ago, I think many people have heard of or have seen the news of Umbrella Revolution. And there's this huge, you know, really huge divide between the pro-establishment and they use the color blue versus the Umbrella Revolution people and they use the color yellow. Hmm. So sometimes
blue and yellow make green.
I joke that, exactly. You know, and, you know, there's the blue camp and there's the yellow camp. And we're the green camp. And
beautiful.
And, you know, which is, you know, the combination of blue and yellow. So we say, hey, you know, whatever political stance you are, whatever interest groups you represent, at the end, I think, you know, we share the same planet. And food is a common bond for anyone of any culture. So, you know, I don't think anyone would say that, oh, I just love to eat junk food. You know, I just want to, you know, the planet to die. I don't think people would say that. Or in fact, you know, that really is something that we do share in common. So I think Green Monday has been, besides, you know, the impact that we create directly, in the more of a macro environment, it even make us stand out as a unifying force that, you know, let's put aside our differences for a moment. You know, can we, you know, create an inclusive platform mm-hmm. that, you know, work towards the same goal? So so in that sense, I'm this is not a subject that is brought up in most of the interviews. Very few people have asked me that question. But I'm fortunate to say that, you know, Green Monday has create some type of a platform that at least can unite some people, which in the last few years has definitely been difficult.
I think that's important in a lot of movements, this inclusivity and finding themes that everybody can align with. I know I want everyone to be vegan, okay? I got into this because I don't believe in killing animals, mm-hmm. period. And then, wow, I learned that it's the best thing for my health and it's great for the environment. Yep. So it was like win, win, win. Fantastic. But to move forward, it takes so long for people to learn new things and accept new things. Our brain is just wired that way. Okay, fine. So let's work with the paleo people and we'll all be against refined foods. That's great. And let's all work together on being a little wary about genetically modified foods and big ag and mm-hmm. wanting more organic. We can all work together for that.
Yes, and it does. It requires that type of teamwork to make it happen. I mean, just one single group or one single, you know, advocacy or company cannot get it done. So it is quite a miracle that it is happening. And I think at this point we have reached a certain tipping point that, you know, instead of us reaching out to companies or reaching out to the giants in the various industries, it's now them coming to us. And now, of course, when that happens, things clearly move much faster. So you know, we are, although we have achieved something in the last 5 years, really in the big picture, this is still just the beginning. We are talking about moving hundreds of millions, if not even billions of people. And just, you know, so I think for many of the people in the audience, you know, is, you know, I think through this particular sharing, now we, you know, that in Asia, for example, there's this organization called Green Monday that hopefully, however or whatever type of role we can play to facilitate this change, that is what this platform is all about, whether it's through our venture fund, whether it's through Green Common, or through the movement of Green Monday.
I'm sure you're familiar with this new book and website, Drawdown.
Yes, okay.
By Paul Hawken. Mm-hmm. I was watching an interview on Charlie Rose, which is takes place on our public broadcasting system, PBS station. And it was fun to listen to. I was familiar already with the book and the website, but he was being interviewed along with Gisele Bündchen, mm-hmm. who's a supermodel married to the football player Tom
That's
Brady.
Right.
And I know nothing about sports and football or who this guy is, but I know he's huge, okay? And, you know, they're talking about being plant-based, which was phenomenal. You talked earlier about the importance of having celebrities and
yes.
people that people follow and want to be like as part of your platform or supporting your platform. And they were doing this, just that. And, you know, I had such mixed feelings as I was listening to Gisele speak, because she was saying things like, when you eat plant-based, you just don't know how good you can feel. I feel so good. We have so much energy, and it's really wonderful, and I can't see, you know, going back. And you know, Tom says it's really improved his playing, and all of this stuff is great. And I'm thinking, I've been saying this for decades. And, you know, to hear it come back, so, you know, it's just, oh, finally. You know, in one way, I'm really thrilled, and another way, I'm exhausted.
Well, I mean, we do need to reach those people who can really magnify or amplify, you know, the message. And, you know, if, you know, through their, let's say, social media, they can reach, you know, 30 million people. And yes, you know, we may be talking about the same message, but, you know, it just happens that they have a broader, you know, audience base. And also, I think part of that, now, of course, you know, even if we're talking about the same message, someone like a Tom Brady, of course, he's an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
A super,
you need meat to build muscle.
Super elite one. Now, for athletes or Olympians to come out to endorse a plant-based diet, I do think that adds a layer.
Absolutely.
Just like, you know, just like a scientist or a doctor or, you know, athlete. Again, not just because they're famous, but because of their profession. I think that adds to it. So in our case in Asia, we also have multiple Olympians who are supporting Green Monday right now. And of course, in that case, we would use that, you know, the performance as the angle, that actually, you know, the cleaner you eat, of course, the faster you run or swim. So, you know, different people appeal to different channels,
mm-hmm.
And that's okay. You know, some people think David Young or Karen or, you know, are the source of information, and that's great. And some people more prefer listening to an athlete or, for beauty purpose, a supermodel. So
the message needs to come from every color, size, shape, nationality, age,
yes.
everything, religion. Everybody needs to be talking about it. So we just have maybe 3 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about Buddhism.
Okay.
And where does that fit into the whole picture? Because you've written a few books on Buddhism.
Yes. Well, I guess, how does it fit into the whole picture? There are two dimensions to that. One is on a personal level, and one is more on a macro or cultural level. On a personal level, I'm extremely blessed to be exposed to Buddhist philosophy since 15, 20 years ago. I just really like the concept of, you know, practicing compassion and mindfulness on a daily, not just daily, but by every moment, really. I think that is how we bring peace to ourselves. That's how we bring joy. And, you know, if you're mindful, if you're just more mindful of all the behavior that that we do, chances are we will do things very differently versus when we say or do things mindlessly. So that has helped me a lot. And now, obviously, with that mindfulness, you start to pay attention to every part of your life, eating being a big part of that. You don't want to cause suffering to other sentient beings. You are aware that when they go through, you know, that process, they obviously have fear and they clearly have pain. So that's on a personal level. And then on a macro level, in Asia in particular, there is a huge Buddhist following. So many of the people who are vegetarian do come from a Buddhist background. And there's nothing wrong with that. But in Green Monday's case, we want to say that, you know, as much as vegetarianism used to be tied to religion, and that's nothing wrong, it's okay, we want to really make it available and accessible to everyone. It is, well, plant-based eating is religion agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need to be any particular religion or have religion at all to choose plant-based eating. It just happened as that Buddhist teaching teach compassion, and clearly that involves not harming animals. So that's on a personal and a macro dimensions.
That sounds good to me. I like ending the show on that note, on that compassion note. So David Young, co-founder and CEO of Green Monday, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me
on It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food, and you can find me at info@realmeals.org. Send me your comments and questions, and visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. And remember, everybody, have a delicious week.